Vishnupada Paramahansa Paribrajakacharya Stutara Satashri Srimad is the one day Shila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Yes.
His confounder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Yes.
Ananta Koti Vaishnavarindi Ki.
Yes.
Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki.
Yes.
Vimse Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Radhar Srivas Harigauru Bhaktivedanta Ki.
Yes.
Shishi Radha Krishna Gaur Gopagopina Shamakanda Radha Kundi Giri Govindhana Ki.
Yes.
Shri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki.
Yes.
Shri Mayapur Dhamma Ki.
Yes.
Ganga Maya Ki.
Yes.
Jamuna Maya Ki.
Yes.
Bhakti Devi Ki.
Yes.
Tulasi Devi Ki.
Yes.
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki.
Yes.
Jainatai Gauru Prema.
Yes.
All gloriously assembled devotees. All gloriously assembled devotees. All gloriously assembled devotees. All glory to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glory to Shri Prabhu. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Continue with chapter 3, second canto, chapter 3. I think we're on, like, what, 62, 63, no? Yeah? Is that what you have? Something like that? Wouldn't have a clue.
I left my book at home, sorry, Maharaj.
Oh, okay.
We're on about 3.5 or 3.6,
I think, this morning. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. All I have here, we're on 3.6.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So we'll just read 3.1, just so we kind of get back where we were. Pratigya.
What's this?
I'm just reading on 57, then I'm going to go back to 63. The Pratigya, solemn statement of purpose of this chapter, entitled Pure Devotional Service, The Change of Heart, is given directly by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to verse 10. In the previous chapters it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus, being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. One must take up devotional service even if one is interested in material facility or being freed from material facility. Right? Generally we think, you know, getting out of the material world is the great thing, and being entangled in the material world is the problem. But both of them are the problem. The real thing is developing love for Krishna. Does that make sense? Make sense? So, like that. Okay, so then we'll continue with. Oh, and then. Okay, so then Jiva Goswami here. Then I think we're at the end of his Anucheda 31, page 63. Down at the bottom, there's that in bold. Quote by Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 98.1, cites Bhagavatam 2.3.10 as the first evidence that Vishnu Bhakti is the Abhideya method of the Vedic scriptures. In this section, and in the sections 2 to 11 of the Anucheda that follow, Jiva Goswami makes clear that demigod worship cannot be counted as the actual Abhideya, for it does not stand alone, nor does it purify the heart of the worshipper, raising him above material desires as does devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Compare with 9th purport to 12th purport. Okay, it means, in other words, Jiva Goswami is pointing out that devotional service is Abhideya, right? It is actual, a direct activity that is giving the experience that is of the goal. Does that make some sense? Means you have an activity. When it's performed, it will give you a result. But that result has to be actually the goal. Right? What is there. And so in this case, then it has to be giving. That means it has to be progressive towards that goal of pure devotional service. And it should be giving the experience of practicing devotional service. Right? So worship of the demigods, though it is an activity, you would call it an abhideya. Technically it's not, because the goal is not to go to the heavenly planets or to get material facility. So it is,
can I say?
Yeah. It does not stand on its own. It will be elements of the activity of devotional service. Does that make sense? Let us say someone is using, like we see later in the Bhagavatam, that there are those who are performing these big sacrifices. Right? There'll be Treta Yuga, they'll be performing the big, big sacrifices. All the demigods are there. So in those yajnas, then the demigods are worshipped. But we see that the ultimate goal was that at the end, Lord Vishnu himself descends to the sacrifice. Does that make sense? So the devotion in which one worshiped the Lord through the rituals that included respecting the demigods, that's the Abhideya. Right? But the actual worship of the demigods is not Abhideya. That's technically Sambandha. Right? Even though it's a worship, it's still in the category of Sambandha in that it's just dealing with the various elements that you'll use in Abhideya in their correct form. Does that make sense? Just like, let us say we take cooking. Now, the cooking is Abhideya. It means cooking here we're defining as something, how you say? Processing food in such a way through the use of fire. Right? To make it, bring it to the point of being edible. Right? Does that make sense? So now, that would mean cutting the vegetables or washing the vegetables or washing the pots technically is not Abhideya. It's Sambandha, because you need pots, you need vegetables that are cut to cook. Does that make sense? You call the whole process cooking, but technically within it, the actual working point that gets the result is when the vegetables go into the pot on the fire. Then you can actually say you're cooking. Does that make sense? So that's what Jiva Goswami is doing here, is that Prabhupada has mentioned it, but we're talking about the real thing. That's why it says the change of heart. You know, it sounds nice, okay, devotional service, a change of heart, yes, they're a devotee, but what does this change of heart mean? It means that whatever activity you're doing, it's connected to Krishna. That's the actual change of heart. You see that without it being connected to Krishna, it does not actually have any meaning. It doesn't have any substance. It may get things of this material world, but they also don't have substance. So the whole point is whatever you're dealing with, whatever is of value to you, it's important to you, you work very hard for it, you get it. But if you actually note, the thing itself can't give you any satisfaction. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, nice house, nice money, nice family, nice relations, position. It can't give because it's material. That's why the karmis suffer. That's why they're here birth after birth after birth. But for the devotee, because he's in knowledge, it's still not that he's not conditioned by his material needs. And factually speaking, if you understand this point in the philosophy, it doesn't matter. That's not the point. We make this big distinction between karma and jnana only because people can't understand what's bhakti. Jnana is superior to karma. Right? But bhakti is actually the superior form, and both the other two are considered material. Make sense? So therefore we will make the point that being detached is superior to being attached. Because if you're not Krishna conscious, then better to be detached Krishna, detached material than attached material. Right? Because at least you're geographically, you're closer to getting out of the material world by being detached than you are if you are attached. But you can go on for millions of lifetimes being just about out of the material world and never get out of it. So technically, as far as devotee goes, that's also useless. Right? So the real point is taking what you have and connecting it to Krishna. Right? And if you do that, then whatever it is, no matter how mundane it is, it suddenly becomes useful in Krishna consciousness. And you find that the actual point that was nice about it was its connection to Krishna consciousness and not the thing itself. Does that make sense? But because we're conditioned, then we must use those conditioned natures. We have to act through them. Does that make sense? This is the part that becomes cloudy. That's why, even though it's a very simple point, again and again it's over, and that's why Jiva Goswami takes it and in finer and finer ways cuts it up so that one doesn't make any mistake about it. Right? Is that we've heard it, Krishna said, whatever you're doing, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you give in charity, do as an offering unto me. Okay? So then we'll think, oh yeah, whatever I do, I offer my food, when I give in charity, it goes to the temple. What happened to the whatever I do? Yes, I chant my rounds, I go to the temple. Okay, that's nice, but what about other things you do? Like that. So if you look at it, we do a lot of things that may or may not be connected to Krishna. So Krishna's saying, whatever it is connected to Him, He is the universal form, it is Him. It's not a problem for Him. Right? Not a problem for Him. Nowadays it's not so topical, but let's say previously, take family life. So one could say that is not very progressive. It's Maya. If it's not connected to Krishna, yes. But if you can connect it to Krishna, it's got the most facets of material conditioning involved in it that you can connect to Krishna. Right? No other ashram has that much involved in it. So if there's a variety of material needs within the heart, it's the only one that has the facility to connect them all to Krishna. Right? If they're connected to Krishna, it's great. If they're not connected to Krishna, it's just as useless as anything else in the material world. Right? So, all those aspects have come from Krishna. Krishna gives directives how to deal with all of that. He Himself is the potency behind it that even gives it its reaction that when you deal with it, you get something from it. Right? You deal with something in family life, there's an experience that's gained. That experience itself is that particular potency, generic potency of the universal form that deals with that. Right? Mother pats kid on head in Tarinpur village. Mother pats kid on head in Bombay. Mother pats kid on head in the Gobi Desert in China. Mother pats kid on head, in the car driving on Interstate 1, through Nevada in America. But the experience is exactly the same. Because it's in the generic potency of the universal form. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, there's no problem in connecting this great, vast broadness of material attachment to Krishna through the authorized channels. it's not looked down upon. Right? It's taken as if you could follow the path of simplicity and not get involved, why would you get involved? Right? Means if I was saying, I want to go from here to this seat over there, so I walk from here, get up from here, walk 3 steps and sit down over there. Now, why would I walk the one where I walk this way, go up the stairs, up there, come down to the Bashad Hall, come back here, and, you know, 5 minutes later, I'm sitting down? That's the point being made. But either way gets me sitting over there. Right? So if I have no need to go up the stairs, look at the gardens, go check out if there's something to eat up there or anything else, then I can just take the 3 steps. But if I need to do all those other things, then I go around the other way. But in any case, I'm going to get back to that seat. Does that make sense? That's why it's said to be a lesser path, right? Does that make sense? Simply because it's more endeavor. It's not as direct and straightforward as the simpler paths. Does that make sense? So the point is if you can take the simpler path, then you take it. It would be stupid to take the more complex path. But if the simple path is not what's going to work for you, you need to take the complex path, that is the perfect path for you. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So therefore, then, ultimately, it's all trying to serve Krishna. So then practically applying this point means all the activities that you do in your life, then the performance of them, taking care of the family, making money, interacting, doing whatever you do, you know, washing your clothes and this and that, that's all, it's not Abhideya. It's actually Sambandha. Right? The Abhideya is that you're doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? In other words, we're separating off the dead ritual from the actual live consciousness. Does that make sense? That's what Jiva Goswami is doing here. Technically, we'll count it all together. We will say raising one's family in Krishna consciousness is devotional service. Right? Isn't it? That's how we'll look at it. But technically, it's that you're doing it to please Krishna, that thought, that's the devotion. The action itself is simply combining the elements of the field so that you can do, think like that for Krishna. Does that make sense? It's a very subtle point, but that's why Jiva Goswami gives it, because otherwise one could think, I'm chanting Hare Krishna in the temple and I'm at home taking care of, you know, the kid who's just had a bad day and is very emotional and is all trippy, and just, you know, sitting them and holding them and getting them through all that, that it's the same. That it's all devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Both are devotional service, but we see that one is direct. You're dealing with the Lord's name, right? In a direct relationship, and the other one is your actual, and that's your interest, is that relationship with the name and the Lord. So it's you and God. Well, the other one, it's actually you and God is there, but of more interest is the elements through which you're relating to God, which actually aren't. Does that make sense? The kid, the emotions, the patting them on the head, the giving them that squeeze and saying, no, everything will be okay, don't worry. That whole experience, that's something separate, completely mundane. But we're connecting it to Krishna because we're seeing this as a devotee of Krishna. We're trying to get him through their difficulties that they're having so that they can be Krishna conscious. And to do that, we've taken the responsibility in this way. It means dealing with this day-to-day mundanity. Does that make sense? So then we can see, is my chanting of japa is a superior activity than the taking care of the child. Right? Does that make sense? Taking care of the child here means the patting them on the head and saying all the right words. And does this make sense? But bear with me. We're still on this very subtle point here. Right? Then we start to see is then actually what is important in the performance of my grihastha ashram is the consciousness. Right? So am I conscious of Krishna while I'm sitting there getting the kid through this rough time? Or am I just conscious of the kid and everything there? That's where then the grihastha starts to make dynamic advancement. Other than their temple activities. That's when they start to make. Otherwise, then they'll make advancement when they're chanting at the temple, offering their prasad, reading their Bhagavatam, and you know, doing those things. And when they're not, then that will be getting in the way. Of course, material things can't get in that much way of devotional service if you're focused on it. But if you're not careful, if the focus becomes more strong on the material, then it will get in the way. Therefore, this point has to be made so we understand where it actually becomes devotional service. Right? We see out of the 64 items of devotional service, only 5 are considered direct. So it's not that, oh, why are you bashing grihastha life? No, 64 items of devotional service that are pancharatrik, 5 are direct. Right? Chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, living in the dham. Everything else is elements within that that assist that. Does that make sense? So that's pancharatrik. Grihastha life is Vedic, which is a step more removed than that. Does that make sense? Bhagavat is those 5. There's nothing indirect in Bhagavat. Pancharatrik means it has those 5, plus it has so many others that are favorable to keep you as much as possible doing those 5. Right? Vedic means your material attraction is more than that, so therefore it encompasses a larger area, but it's simply trying to get you to do those 5. Right? So you don't get distracted. Does this make some sense? So then what we're trying to do here is you make that distinction so that the quality of the performance of one's activities, whether they're in karma yoga or jnana yoga, is improved. Otherwise, the tendency will be, is I'm okay. I chant my 16 rounds, I follow the 4 regulative principles, I do my bit in devotional service, and Hari Bol. But the point is that living entity at every moment can be improve his consciousness. It doesn't mean that the activity is going to change at all. But the quality of the consciousness can. Does this make some sense? Right? Then we start to realize that it's not the activity that's important. It's actually the connection to Krishna that's important. Right? But at the same time is, because of our conditioning, these activities for me today are important. Therefore, I will use those as mediums to try to remember Krishna. Does that make some sense? Okay. Any questions on this?
Okay. Anucheta 98.
1. In this way, it is shown that devotional service gives life to these various methods by which one attains his desires. Therefore, in all the Vedas, it is said that one should perform devotional service. Also, without even performing any other activities, one can simply perform devotional service alone. This is shown in these words. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Okay. You catch that here. Is that he's saying... So he's showing two things. Therefore, devotional service gives life to these other methods, right? So that's what we were meaning before, is that that's actually the life of the activity, is the devotional connection, right? Because otherwise, it's just the same old thing, right? We've eaten unlimited times, we've raised kids unlimited times, we've been kids unlimited times, we've had... It's all gone on. But we've never been satisfied. Right? Does that make sense? But when you connect it to Krishna, it gives it life. It has some meaning. It has some value. It has some reality. So they're saying is one... So therefore, whatever one is doing, one should perform devotional service. Then he goes on to say is that you can also just perform devotional service. Right? So we can see here it's used in both ways, that connecting the mundane to Krishna is devotional service. But one could also just directly perform devotional service without connecting the mundane. Does that make sense? We could just chant Hare Krishna all day like Hare does Thakur. Right? Does that make sense? You know, or just read Bhagavatam all day, like Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Or but this, we could do that. But if not, then whatever one's doing, one connects it to devotional service. Is this okay? Yeah. I'm not losing anybody here. Not getting through. Okay. So now he says a person with broader intelligence, and here he's talking about one full of material desire, right? Or one interested in liberation. Or one with no desire. But if he has broader intelligence, means he understands how to connect this to Krishna. That's broader intelligence. Right? Because otherwise you'll say, oh, someone who has material desire, well, that's not intelligent. But not connecting to Krishna, that's not intelligent. But having material desire, real understanding one has it, and then connecting it to Krishna, that's broader intelligence. That's smart. Because they don't just go away. Just because you say, oh, that's Maya, does that mean that it went away? You just go, oh, this is Maya. Does it just go away, the desire in the heart? No. So that means that one has to do something progressive that is going to connect it to Krishna. Does that make sense? Then it goes away. Right? It, either you hear how it's useless and then don't get involved, or you hear how useless it is and see others involved in it and then it's obvious how useless it is, or one hears, sees, and oneself gets involved in that activity and then sees how useless it is. Right? These are the three kinds of at least useful intelligence, right? Fourth, that you do the activity and still don't learn anything, that's considered pretty useless. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, he says, by all means whatever you are. So there's no one left out. It's not that, oh, I have more material desire so I can't be involved in devotional service. That's not the way it was. Right? It doesn't matter. Wherever you are, you can always be engaged in devotional service if you understand the science. Right? If you don't understand the science, yes, then the change of heart is in some parts not. But the idea is this, whatever is there, its only value is devotional service. Somehow or another have to connect to Krishna. If you say, well, it's not direct, no, it's not direct. But it can be indirect. So we should find the indirect. Does that make sense? Yeah. 2. In Sri Vishnu Purana, Pulaha Muni said, what is not attained when the Supreme Lord, who is the deliverer from evils, who in Vedic yagyas is the yagya purusha, and who in yoga is the supreme person, is pleased. Without performing any other activities, a person who takes shelter of Lord Narayana automatically attains the four goals of life. Therefore, the result of hearing all the Vedic scriptures is that one comes to understand that he should engage in devotional service to the Lord, who himself confirms this in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.3. By the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. Okay, so then, so we're making the point that what can't you gain if you connect yourself to the Lord? Right? Anything, material or spirit, that can be gained through that. Right? So that's the first step. So now we see he's taking us in the progression here. From seeing the, how you say it? The material endeavor is a complete separate entity that gets its results and I'm satisfied with that. And then there's devotional activities. But actually, even those material results that you want, those should be obtained through connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? Now he's going to take it a step further, right? Because, in other words, we plug in wherever we are, and we keep progressing along this path. So we should know the whole thing, because we should know where we're going. Then the next one, he says, this being so, number 5, they who are not very wise worship Lord Vishnu in order to obtain the various benefits otherwise attained by other spiritual processes, beginning with karma yoga. Because of committing offenses, these people's worship of the Lord brings them only the fulfillment of these desires and nothing more. In this way, one need only engage in devotional service to fulfill these desires. However much more than this, devotional service gives the greatest benefit. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.19.27 explains, the Supreme Personality of Godhead fulfills the material desires of a devotee who approaches him with such motives, but he does not bestow benedictions upon the devotees that will cause him to demand more benedictions again. However, the Lord willingly gives the devotee shelter at his own lotus feet, even though such a person does not aspire for it, and that shelter satisfies all his desires. That is the Supreme Personality's special mercy. This verse means he certainly, satyam, fulfills the request, artitam, of the human beings, ninam, who ask, artitam, him. He never gives something that will lead one astray. In that sense, he is not always artada, the bestower of benedictions. He only gives benedictions that, once given, the receiver does not return. That is the meaning. This means that because of feeling unfulfilled when the happiness obtained in that benediction wanes, a person returns and asks for another benediction. This is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.14. As supplying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire, but instead increases it more and more, the endeavor to stop lusty desires by continual enjoyment can never be successful. In fact, one must voluntarily cease from such material desires. The supremely merciful Lord, understanding this, gives vidate, his lotus feet, nija pada palavam, which satisfies all desires, iksha pidanam, to the devotees, bhajatam, who, because they do not know the sweetness present in his lotus feet, do not desire to attain them, anichatam. He is like a mother who takes from her son's mouth the clay he was eating and gives him a candy instead. That is the meaning. So, and he says, it's not so wise if you worship the Lord simply for the material desire.
Someone could have told me. Anyway, I'm you.
Okay. So then you have two aspects, is that he worships the Lord for material gain. Better he worships the Lord than worships someone else, because it's the Lord who's giving it anyway. But better he's worshiping the Lord to develop devotional service. And as a side, artha comes anyway. Right? Does that make sense? From dharma comes artha anyway. The proper performance of one's duties to please the Supreme Lord will fulfill all one's needs. Does this make sense? So he's making here again a subtle distinction, like the last point, is that of going to the Lord for the material desire, but that's basically all that one's consciousness is on, and worshiping the Lord with there may be the need to deal with that desire, like we see Kardama Muni. He approached Vishnu to get married so he could remove those material desires so that he could go back to Godhead. Right? So that's wise. He has those desires. He needs to deal with them, so the only one to go to are the Lord. And it says he'll fulfill those desires if they're not going to entangle him. Right? So that was the approach. Therefore, he got a very suitable wife, had a very suitable child, right? Can't get better than God himself. Right? And, you know, he went back to his lifestyle, his celibate lifestyle, and you know, went back to Godhead. Does that make sense? So what's being said here is making a distinction that the devotee approaches the Lord, but leaves it simply at the material need. Oh Lord, I have so much desire, I want to get married, only you can arrange this, you're the supreme controller, you know all things, you know what I need, you know what would be the suitable girl, you know, I know you'll bring the proper suitable girl, and you know, I make sure she's like this and that, and you know, I think these are, you know. So this kind of thing is going to be limited. So Krishna may or may not fulfill this, because in your mind it's not actually progressive. But Krishna is so clever, he fulfills desires in such a way that even though you weren't planning to be progressive, he makes it that way. Right? So that basically here is meaning, because so Krishna's going to do it in such a way that one progresses, because even fulfilling the desire, it does not give satisfaction. Material energy can't give. It just can't. If I made this fabulous hologram of some nice prasad and told you, go for it, it's yours, you can have it all, you wouldn't be satisfied. You know, one may think, well, that's absurd because the hologram is just light and, you know, and the body needs something more substance. Yes, but the soul is spiritual, and then what you're looking for is material, which is a completely different energy. It has nothing to do with you. There's nothing in common with us and the material energy, right? We're eternal. It's temporary. We're full of knowledge. It's full of ignorance, right? We're full of happiness. It's just dead matter. So there's nothing in common. So all that's there is the Lord enters it through the universal form, gives some life to it himself, and then we think the dead matter is what's there, right? So we're still foolish. But now when we see it in the relationship to devotional service connecting to the Lord, then the devotional service becomes the life, because the life of that activity is actually the Lord himself. Does that make sense? So the Lord's entered it, and we're connecting it to the Lord, so then there's some connection, then it becomes spiritualized. Does that make sense? So he's saying is that the desire should be done in that way. Dealing with them should be done like that, because the desire itself never can satisfy you. It just can't. It doesn't have the substance. So fulfill it in connection with the Lord, then that connection will be the substance that will make you satisfied, and you'll be able to see that the material activity and result is not what's important. And you'll be able to slowly, slowly, with practice, drop that. So that's what he's bringing out here. So the Lord, he's merciful, therefore he fulfills the desires that will bring you closer to that. And ones that will take you away, he doesn't fulfill. Right? That's why the karmis prefer to go to the demigods. Because they're asked, and if you deserve, you'll get it. But with Krishna, even you deserve, you may not get it. Because if it's going to take you away from him, it won't. He'll fulfill it, but in such a way that it will bring you closer. Right? He'll find a different way. You want it fulfilled this way, he'll fulfill it that way. Does that make sense? Number 9. What is his book?
I have one.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay. No, it's okay. It's okay.
Just keep reading.
Okay.
I have to catch up with it.
Okay. Yeah, well, we're just at the end of the, in Jiva Goswami, at the end of the third chapter on change of heart. The great power, so we're just talking on, Jiva Goswami is giving these subtle hints at how the heart, you can change it by being able to distinguish between the matter and the spirit. Because otherwise, like we take the thing of, we gave the example of raising my family is devotional service. But Jiva Goswami is pointing out that raising the family is not, it's karma. It's actually sambandha. It's an element of the field of devotional service. And that you're engaging the family, your activities of interacting with the family in the Lord's service, that's the abhideya, that's the devotional service. And that the thing itself are just elements of sambandha of the field. Like that. So there's ways you expertly take care and maintain the field so that you can perform the service. But those actions themselves technically aren't abhideya. Like that. So, yes.
Could you give an example of how Krishna fulfills desires in other ways?
How he fulfills desires in other ways. Okay, you've decided that you just have to have, you know, that latest, you know, nice, you know, 2 foot off the ground Ferrari, right? And you work very hard, you get the money, and you buy the car. And then you have the car and you think, when I get the car, I'll do this and I'll do that and I'll do so many things with it and I'll be so happy. Then you find out it has so many mechanical problems, you have to constantly take it down to the shop to get it fixed, you know, like that. And then, you know, because it's only 2 feet off the ground, then the garbage truck that was parked in front of it didn't see it, so it rolled over it. And, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, you wanted to do something, and it's only got 2 seats, and then you finally found, you know, that girl that you've always wanted to be able to give the ride, but your friend is, your mother is there in the car, so there isn't another seat to put her in the car. And like this, it just goes on and on and on. Or it's great, and you happen to, but you have to pick up some shopping, but there's no, they don't have any place to put anything in the car, right? It's got 4 wheels, 2 seats, and a motor, right? There's no place for groceries. So then after a while you start thinking, well, maybe this isn't so great. You know, it's just I had this desire and it seemed to be nice, but it doesn't do all the things. Or yeah, now I've got something can do, you know, 200 miles an hour, and as soon as you get out of third gear, then you hear the siren behind you and the lights flashing that you're going too fast. You know, you haven't even got to fourth gear, let alone sixth. Right? Right? You know, or you get your car, you have your Ferrari, you're on the Autobahn in Germany, you can drive as fast as you like, there are no rules, but it only has 3 lanes and it's packed traffic time. And so there you are in your Ferrari behind a Polsky Fiat doing 30 kilometers an hour. It wears on you. It really does. You know? Like that. Yes.
There's a classical example from, and it probably explains it very clearly and nicely in the Krishna book, of Nala Kuvera Manigriva, the sons of Kuvera. So Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods.
Mm.
That means,
you know, unlimited wealth.
Unlimited wealth. And he's got these 2 sons, and they have every right to be in heaven by their karma. And there's the Nandanandana gardens, where the demigods go to enjoy, so they have every right to be there. And they're there, and there are these beautiful apsaras. There's nothing wrong with that. They're sporting with them in the waters. So if you make it to heaven and you can be in such a position, karmically speaking, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so this is what they're doing. They got in that situation and they're fulfilling their desires. And, you know, they think everything's all right and we'll just go on fulfilling our desires that way. But Krishna had a different plan. So along came Narada Muni. And Narada Muni apparently cursed them because of their behaving indecently in his presence. But actually, Narada Muni, being a Vaishnava, never curses anybody. That was not his intention. Actually, it was a blessing. The blessing was that they would descend to earth, live in the body of trees, in the holy dham of Vrindavan for 100 years. So in that way, you see, they're spiritually situated in the dham, but at the same time,
they are trees.
Being trees and also being fully conscious, they have an opportunity to reflect on their misbehavior, reflect on the real purpose of human life, and then at the end be delivered by Krishna himself in the most wonderful way. Mm. And they actually went back. It doesn't say that they went directly, you know, like in a Monopoly game, you know, go directly back home, back to Godhead. They went back to their original positions, but now they're devotees of the Lord. That's what Krishna wanted of them. That the only problem with you two guys is that you forgot, like it states in the Shastra, Vishnu Bhakti Smrito Daiva. The devas, the demigods, are my devotees. And you are acting like demons, more or less.
A little less devotional.
There's that nice breakdown that Srivad Madhvacharya gives of the word demon, ashun ramyate, ramyate. Ashu means this life, and the ra means ramyate, ramyate. One who enjoys, one whose interest is only to enjoy this one life. He has no concern for, he doesn't even believe in the next life. There's no concern for it. So, this was the Lord's point. In that sense, you were behaving like demons, because you're only concerned with this life. You didn't even care to, even the ladies were there, they were covering themselves, but you were so intoxicated and just absorbed in sense gratification, you didn't care for Narada Muni. Lord Krishna says in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, acharyamam vijnanam, that an acharya, such as certainly sampradaya acharya like Narada Muni, this should be seen as my own self. You see. So if you disrespect Narada, you're disrespecting me. And you're supposed to be my devotee, you see. And you're supposed to be a devotee of my devotees. That's what it means to be Vaishnava. So this was all a little lesson for you. Actually, in the grand scheme of things, what is 100 years in the body of tree in Vrindavan? It's not really that bad at all. The thing is they resumed the position that the Lord wanted them to be in, but they resume that position in the consciousness of being the Lord's pure devotees, and they very definitely were not going to make that mistake again. So all their desires were satisfied, actually. Because those materialistic demoniac desires that pushed them into that situation were cleansed from the heart. See, that's how such desires are actually really satisfied, when they're removed from the heart. Now, that doesn't mean negation. It means they're replaced with something better, with the desire to serve the sweetness of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. That it actually satisfies the soul. So that's, we can say, is a classical Shastric example.
Yes, very good.
And there was, the important thing is that there's nothing inauspicious in this at all. As I said, even Narada Muni's, he was acting, because there are sages who are merely munis in the sense of being very knowledgeable in the Shastra, vidyadharas, but they're proud of their knowledge and they become agitated when they see someone's ignorance, and then they curse with the intention of actually putting this person down, you see. But that was not Narada Muni's intention at all. He had this long-range vision that, yeah, all right, you can stay in the body of trees for 100 years and reflect on how you got in this position, but the Lord himself is going to deliver you in the